Hi, I'm Rusty.
I'm Peter.
And this week we have a phenomenal guest lined up for our show. Peter, tell everyone who we have.
Ooh, Rusty, our guest is a master statistician, a best-selling author, TEDx speaker, creator and coach on the vibration of change, spiritual mythbuster, healer, host of her own talk show, and teaches on the Academy of Divine Knowledge. I'm excited to bring on the show Christine Upchurch.
Everybody, let's get on with it.
Streaming from Retro Earth Studio and brought to you by
WeAreHistorically.com, Conscious Human Apparel, and
Learn to Play Jazz Piano Like a Pro by a Pro with Jazz Piano Pro Essentials at jazzpianopro.com.
All right, everybody, let's meet Christine.
And Christine, I'm so grateful for you to be on the show today. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thank you.
So let's just dive into the meat of things. Why don't you give our listeners a little bit of a brief synopsis and bio on who you are, what you do, and why you're really all about this vibration of change?
You know, I think that change is the name of the game. And if you think in terms of my career path and my personal journey, it's been a lot about change. And sometimes I've been like, you know, I've been rather resistant to change, but I've learned to embrace it. I'm a former research statistician. I used to design and analyze clinical trials in cancer research. Faced a cancer crisis of my own when doctors didn't have anything to treat me early, healed myself, became a healer, and then eventually went into the consciousness realm. And, you know, I teach workshops. I host a radio show, weekly radio show. I'm currently also the host of the 2021 Nautilus Book Awards Author Spotlight Series. I do some coaching, including media coaching. It's just sort of a mix. And then in terms of my personal journey, it's been an interesting journey, not only having the courage to face the truth about where my heart lies in terms of my career and making some changes, but also in terms of my personal journey, letting go of a dysfunctional marriage, letting go of some friends along the way, being open to change that I didn't expect to be open to. And these days I'm really passionate about doing a double take on some of our belief systems, because I find that our belief systems are often in our background and that we just assume that they're truth. And I've sort of gotten smacked in the face with the fact that many of the things that I believed in are actually illusions or restrictions, you know, boxes that I've climbed into or resided in for a very long time, where I need to knock down the sides of the box and hop out. So it's really been about a lot of change. And I think that it's, you know, my journey is not unique in that sense, because I think that although we don't like change, you know, we tend to want positive change.
Life has other things in store, that is for certain. So I guess one of the more interesting angles is coming from this, you know, analytical scientific background and really evolving and diving deep into, you know, what is now called the woo, but really just like these deeper spiritual truths that are at the essence of our being. So how did that like awakening and transition really start?
Well, it's funny because, you know, when I was young, I used to see energy around animals and insects and sometimes some people. So I was open to this other realm. And I knew I was here for an important reason. And I have vague recollection of interacting with a woman who I didn't know, who would, I remember her handing me a ball, but I think it was actually an energy ball. So when I was younger, I had some interesting experiences, and then I kind of unlearned some of that stuff. And then fast forward, I was, it was between my junior and senior year of college. I was a math major in college. I was trying to decide, do I go into computer science or do I go to grad school and become a statistician? And I'm walking along and I'm like wandering past this, I'm having to walk to and from this house sitting job, this like 2 miles away because my my old Chevelle is like the battery has fallen out because the shelf is rotted out, you know. So I'm walking, doing a lot of walking, and I'm walking past this little convenience store, and I'm thinking, you know, should I stop and get some Doritos? You know, like just like the usual mind chat, like, do I you know, get magnetized towards that junk food and bring it home? And then all of a sudden, as I'm walking along, I hear this voice, and it said, "You're a healer," like loud and clear. And I'm like, what? And it wasn't the usual mind chatter or the inner voice. It sounded like somebody else's voice. And I'm looking around and like, I'm the only one walking down the street, right? And I started thinking about, well, you know, what does it mean to be a healer? Oh, healers have to be incredibly holy and close to perfect and all this stuff. And I thought, that's the most egotistical thing my mind has ever come up with. So I heard that same voice and that same phrase a couple of times that summer, and I just chalked it up to ego, right? So I ignored it. And, you know, when we get those inner voices and direction and we ignore them, then what happens, you know, the universe hits us over the head with it.
Yeah, right back around.
Yes. So anyway, fast forward a number of years, I'm working on my doctorate in mathematical statistics, really unhappy with my direction, although, you know, I'm reasonably good at it. It's not like that it was a problem in that respect. And I ended up developing the early stages of lymphoma. Wow. And doctors didn't have anything to offer me at that point. They said, early treatment's not helpful. We're going to wait and watch until it gets to be bad enough. And, you know, and when it gets to be bad enough, we'll put you on chemotherapy for the rest of your life. It's considered to be palliative treatment instead of curative treatment. So that forced me into this whole other realm of, you know, what else is there? And I learned about meditation, visualization, all sorts of things about diet. And I dealt with some of the emotional issues that were keeping me stuck and ultimately healed myself without any medical treatment. And so it put me on a new path because it became a passion, manifestation, healing, you know, it was just like this door had been opened into this beautiful realm that I wanted to explore more. And that's how I ended up shifting.
Oh my gosh. I love it. That's so powerful. And I think the part that really resonated with me in the sense of clearing out your own emotional energy and the baggage of it and really allowing that to flow effortlessly so you can transform yourself and really tap back into that power that each being I feel is instilled with and is our capacity to heal this vessel, you know, and it all is on that energetic plane first. So in terms of the clearing away of these blockages, what were kind of these bigger revelations that led to this internal healing?
I think that part of it was that I was doing what I should do as opposed to what I wanted to do. I ended up, it's funny because at one point somebody asked me if I was going to finish my doctoral dissertation. And I found myself saying, I'm going to finish it if it kills me, because I was like this close. But I listened to my words. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know, like it is killing me, right? So I chose to leave. I was really close to finishing my doctoral dissertation. I had taken 22 graduate courses in mathematical statistics. I had finished my written exams. I completed my 4 different levels of oral exams, and I had some of my research done, and I chose to leave. And so listening to my own verbiage, so that was like looking at my belief system, right? And at that point, I was experiencing the lymphoma, and I decided it's time to go. And at that point, I knew that it was time to leave New Jersey. And my ex and I ended up moving across country to the Seattle area. And within 3 weeks, all of the lesions disappeared. All of the cancerous lesions disappeared. So it was like, that taught me that we have to follow our inner voice. We need to also be aware of our belief system, be aware of what we're telling ourselves. And looking back, I know that when I was in, you know, growing up in school, and yeah, I really didn't want to go to school, what would I manifest? A sore throat, you know, a tummy ache. But What do you manifest when you're working on your doctoral dissertation and you really don't want to finish, right? Cancer will do it. So anyway, it taught me to explore my belief system. It taught me about the power of the mind-body experience. And it also began me on a very long-term journey of looking at my own sense of unworthiness. And I'd like to say that within the context of that time period when I healed myself, that I dealt with my baggage. It's like, it's been a lifelong process since then too. And that emotional baggage is just, I think of it kind of like, it kind of clogs our energetic system, not allowing the light to flow through, not allowing us to express our soul more fully.
Yeah, fully. I love that. Beautifully said. And it comes back to that component, you know, we truly are gods and goddesses of manifestation and creation. And when we fail to harness that power, it becomes hijacked by these egoic beliefs and the constructs that we limit ourselves on. And I think the unworthiness factor is really key to 99% of human suffering in the beginning. You know, we grow up just always feeling inadequate. And it's, I don't know, we can always dive into this. It's because truthfully, we're always doing this external search for our fulfillment rather than radiating our light in which we are. So it's this transition that I find is amazing with you. And it's this component to consciously questioning the belief systems. How transformative has that been just in these past few years of, you know, your own hosting and your own kind of brand building?
Well, it's funny because I've always thought of myself as a spiritual seeker. I had a great attachment to think of myself as being spiritual. And within the last 5 to 7 years, I found myself questioning some of my beliefs around spirituality. And that's different. That goes beyond like the worthiness issue, because I know on a deep level that I'm worthy stuff getting in the way of that. But, having to question the tribal beliefs, my tribal beliefs of what it means to be spiritual. At first I had a hard time with it. And I tell you that the first thing that kind of pushed me in that direction was when I was interacting with somebody who was acting very, very spiritual. And yet, you know, they came across as just, oh, so sweet and they're so light. And they were being very manipulative and very judgmental. And I found myself feeling some anger towards that, not like expressing it in any big way, but I felt the anger and I was judging my own anger about that. And I thought, first of all, why should I judge my anger? You know, I've got this belief that there are only certain emotions that are spiritual and there are a bunch of them that are not, right? And then I thought, you know, Are our emotions spiritual? Well, all of them really are. Like that anger was telling me some really pertinent information about where I needed to set boundaries. It was also telling me that this person had this dual vibration. And it also began my exploration into what I consider to be the tenets or sort of laws of spirituality that have been created within the New Age, some of which aren't, they're either not true at all or they're ways in which they're not true. And so that's been kind of mind-blowing. And it's also been a bit both confusing and a little fear-based for me, because I've had to buck against the tribal beliefs, right?
Yeah, I love that. Well, I like how you put that, you know, because it resonated with the fear-based aspect where there's so much attachment and identification with these temporary things that we turn it into another stake to, you know, stab our own heart, rather than recognizing that really the emotional realm is just that sensory feedback. It's that radar. And I like how you put it in terms of picking up the dual energy and the nature of that being, where it's like, oh yeah, that's extra spicy. But when we get caught up in the spiritual materialism, we always are judged. It becomes another source of judgment and persecution. It's just like, that's ego 101, folks. Don't separate yourself.
Yes. And it's amazing, you know, the more I've kind of stepped back and sort of taken the bird's eye view about these tribal beliefs and my personal beliefs about spirituality, I've come to realize that there's a whole lot of ego involved. I mean, not just like some of these people who are leaders in this realm who are very ego-based, but I mean, even the process of being spiritual and being on our spiritual journeys can be very ego-driven, which doesn't get us to where we strive to go.
Yeah, it just becomes another cul-de-sac where, and I always like to bring it back to like the three gunas, and it's, you know, you have the dullness, the passion, and then goodness itself, where it just turns into that self-righteousness. It turns into that, I'm spiritual being, I'm, you know, and I resonated with you deeply when you're like, the person acted spiritual. Or it's just like, there's so much of a difference between talking the talk and walking the walk. And it is that component of anything that I guess I would say is like the hint of separation and judgment and assumption and like projection is just like, that energy does not vibe well with me.
And I think that you can have somebody who says the right things and has the right tone of voice, who's very ego-based, even though they're acting spiritual. And then you have somebody who, you know, swears at somebody who crosses them, who comes in front of them, cuts them off in traffic, and then they laugh at themselves. You know, there's one is being genuine, like, oh, I had my human moment, and isn't that cute? And now I'm going to get back into alignment. And the other is like, I'm superior, and I'm stuck in ego, but I'm calling myself spiritual for the world to see.
Yes. And that's always a fascinating aspect where, you know, in truth, I always see spirituality as just a process of unfoldment. You know, it's always questioning and seeking the deeper truth within your beingness, within life, within this connectivity that we all have. And the moment we think we're there, that's when I always find that those cul-de-sacs and loops come about where it's like, oh man, life's really going to get you the next come around because this lesson's going to be rough.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I remember, years ago, when I thought that I had gotten so that I was really good at embracing what is, you know, that's one of the surrender piece. I know you talk about surrender too, that it's such an important piece. And then I was going through a divorce and I was having to sort through a lot of things in my old house. I was letting go of what I thought was my forever house and letting my ex have that. And you know, sorting through a whole bunch of things and doing it while I was out of town and hurrying. And then I started getting this weird pain at the base of my skull and ended up developing shingles. Now, shingles is incredibly, incredibly painful. And there I was thinking, oh, I've arrived at embracing what is, you know, and then I get this pain and I recognize that, no, I wasn't there yet. I had more things to learn about that and more about vibration. And you know, it's a sort of thing where when we think we've arrived, you're right, it's like a cul-de-sac, you know, okay, we need to keep driving and get the heck out of it.
Don't you just love that? Like life is probably, I always like to see it as the greatest sense of humor of just this divine irony. You know, anytime we really do think we're there, it's like, all right, test it. Let's see how you handle it.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, Peter, but I get all sorts of messages numerically in terms of signs. And when you pay attention to the messages, I found that the powers that be, whether you want to call it guidance, higher self, God, universal intelligence, it's hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious.
Yes. So I think that's one of the things too, where it's, you know, we can kind of be a testament to that, to, you know, mutual healers in our own respects. And every time I have a student that has a profound recognition, you know, something is just like a breakthrough, that paradigm just shatters and they find this newfound truth. I always remind them before they leave, I was like, just be aware of the signs, you know, life will always test you and everything is grace. Just remember that, you know, and then it's like, I'll get a text message like an hour later, 2 hours later already, you know, and it's like, come on, you know, like you got to just dance the dance and enjoy the ride.
Yeah. And not resist the ride. You know, it's kind of like being on a roller coaster, you know, if you're feeling resistant, you're going to get nauseous. But if you just sort of like, oh, this is what I'm doing right now, I'm going to let go, then the ride is a lot smoother.
Oh, 100%. And in your own kind of big paradigm shifts, I guess, what are kind of the big resistances that you've had and how have you been able to really kind of overcome them? Because I know you talk about the dissolution of a relationship, you know, these, you know, because I personally am also, I going through went through a similar situation, and it's that the ending of these projected futures, you know, these dreams that we've been building, you know, how are you able to kind of handle that and rekindle that light within yourself?
Well, it's interesting because I knew for a number of years it was time for me to leave. And I used to travel a week at a time to go do presentations in different cities and different countries sometimes, and then teach two seminars. So I had a whole lot of colleagues there, you know, and also had a, somebody in the administrative side, and we had this beautiful, loving team, and I used to go, and I'd be gone for a week, and I missed my kids, but, and I'd be home for several weeks, and I'd go for another week, and it just felt so good to not only be a part of this loving team, be leading this loving team, and then teaching sometimes hundreds of people how to facilitate healing and watching them shift and feeling the energy of it all. It was this beautiful experience. And I come home and it was like this A-B comparison of this expansion and this contraction. And I've had so many issues when I was in therapy and doing a lot of inner work, and I was having a hard time letting go of it. And it's almost like I had let go of the attachment of the relationship, but I wasn't able to leave the family unit. And then I had a colleague who was teaching the Akashic Records, and she wanted to come up to my center from California to the Seattle area and teach, you know, a workshop. And I welcomed her, of course. And I really, you know, it's like I had enough on my plate. I didn't want to learn the Akashic Records, but I wanted to welcome her and have people who'd been to my center before come and learn the Akashic Records. But I'm there, so you know, I'm listening. And so the first evening, she's talked for maybe 2 hours, and we get into the Akashic Records, and we're just supposed to get in there and see if the guides have anything for us. And immediately upon getting into the guide into the Akashic Records, I saw myself in a past life as like a 12, 13 year old girl with long stringy black hair. And I was being beaten with a chain by a male family member who was like in his 20s. And it was either an uncle or an older brother, I don't know which. And I knew I was getting beaten because of the fact that I had taken some food. And it was not appropriate in the rules of the family because, it had to be delved out. You know, food was limited. And I was this perky, like defiant thing. And I know that I left that life defiant, and I wasn't going to let anybody tell me what I could or couldn't do. But I left that life with this belief system that when you take for yourself, you're taking away from the family. And when you get into the Akashic Records, it's this amazing thing because it's not just about the awareness here, like you can get into in therapy. It's like this vibrational shift, like this awareness. And I recognized that I didn't need to have that belief in my system, in my life. And by the end of the weekend, I was telling my husband at the time, in a very loving way, I'm done. I will always love you. I will never be in love with you again. It's time for me to move out. And so it was this huge shift, and it was a vibrational shift. So despite all the healing work that I had done and on in a variety of ways, it was getting into the Akashic Records and seeing what I had brought into this life, that belief system that was getting in my way, that helped create that big opening for me.
Wow. Wow. That's impactful. And I think that just goes to the testament of the power of recognition. You know, it's that feeling like when we're running out of air and we get to the surface and we can finally take that breath, it's like the pressure just releases itself. And I find that's really fascinating in terms of your own kind of guided journey into that. Now, this brings up the whole aspect of, you know, the multiple aspects of our existence, this reincarnation, this generational baggage, these passed on energies. And what are some other examples that you can provide in terms of having these recognitions, whether it be, you know, the past self and past life inertia finally subsiding, learning and breaking free from that cycle, or even just like a parallel life in that sense?
I've got plenty of those examples. And my first recognition of having a past life occurred when I was probably in my early 20s. My ex and I were watching the video, and it was his week to choose the video, right? And so it wasn't a chick flick, right? So anyway, he had chosen the movie. I think it was called The Right Stuff. It was about astronauts. And so I'm being, you know, a good partner, and I'm sitting next to him, and I'm kind of watching, but I'm also looking at a fashion magazine or something like that, and occasionally looking up. And at one moment, I look up, and there are these astronauts in training who are kind of like weightless, and they're doing some silly things. And I looked up, and I burst out laughing. And in that moment, I had this instantaneous memory of seeing this before. And what came to mind is that it felt really good to be in a young, healthy body, because that other time, I remembered what I was in a musty movie theater watching that. I could smell the mold and mildew in the theater. I was watching that up on the screen, and I was an old black man in a lot of pain, really elderly. And I'm thinking, this is really strange. So I asked my husband, I'm like, is this from the movie or is this film footage? He says, oh, this is actual film footage. And the film footage occurred before I was born, and I started putting two and two together. So it was like this recognition. Oh, you know, I mean, you can say maybe it was a past life. Maybe I was tuning into somebody else's life. But it also explained why all my life I've felt this strange kinship with, it's going to sound strange, but with middle-aged, heavy-set black men. Like, you know, and that's not the culture I've been brought up, you know, surrounded by them. But that explained that piece of it. So that got me really interested in past lives. And I've also had experiences with parallel realities with myself in another life,
For our listeners, just so it's like there's many things that have been kind of essentially proven by Western science, still getting known today, and it's still really just a developing union between spirit and science. And the parallel lives aspect is that we're always simultaneously living in these different realities based on these different choices or paths that we choose to take. And I resonate with you on the parallel life aspect and the reincarnation. I believe one of my first ones was I was having a lot of throat chakra issues in college. It was just like, I just felt a lot of pressure, like someone was just on my neck all the time. It was the weirdest thing. And I remember watching, it was one of those old timey like HBO shows about like the roaring 20s and some mafia things. And there was a character that actually got their throat cut. And that instant moment was just replay of same thing happening to me. And then just like on the floor, you know, transitioning out. And then the moment like that memory processed, I was first off in an instant sweat, just like casually hanging out in winter. Second, it was just like, oh wow, it released. It was one of the most powerful moments where I was like, what was that?
That's
where I had
wild
to look into it, right?
But yeah.
So I'm curious, because in terms of my parallel life experiences, I feel like most of them have come up in usually a dream or in a meditation. But when is the kind of insights popped in for you that you've been like, oh, wow, this is not the choice or choice to make, or valuing something, or what has been your insights from it?
Well, it's interesting because my first experience with this was before I had ever heard of parallel lives and this concept that it's kind of like we think in terms of, you know, having one timeline usually. And some scientists believe, and there are plenty of us in the consciousness community who believe that there's actually splits that occur. It's kind of like this tree, like, okay, it may be every moment, every choice in every moment, but it could just be more significant moments where you have a choice and it goes like this. Then there's a timeline that goes this way, and another one this way. And then there's another one over here and it goes like this, you know? And, but I didn't have that concept in mind the first time I had an experience when I was just starting to wake up one morning and, was feeling a little pressure here. You know, there are these acupressure points, acupuncture points that relate to the lungs, that sometimes I can feel a little sensitive before I'm starting to get a chest cold or something. And so I'm waking up and I really needed to run into the bathroom and I'm just kind of groggy, but I'm feeling pressure there. And as I walk into the bathroom, I see myself as Christine Upchurch, but instead of living, you know, where I was living at the time, I was living in Lincoln, Nebraska, which was a place I moved from at age 15. And there I am sitting at this kitchen table in a house I don't recognize. And I'm smoking a cigarette and got a different hairstyle, you know, slightly different hair color. I remember saying to her in my mind, "You've got to stop smoking because it's affecting me in this reality." And in that moment, before I had really, you know, awakened fully and understood how ridiculous it all sounded on a 3D level, I understood that I could set boundaries between her and me. And I remember thinking afterwards, that's really bizarre. And it wasn't until years later when I had a big healing from interacting with that life again, that I recognized how powerful it could be to tap into our other lives. Because it was I can tell that story if you want, but it was a moment when I recognized that there's real purpose for us being focusing as a soul on the timeline we're focusing on right now. But also that there are these parallel realities where we are expanding and growing and learning, and we have unique lessons in each of those. So it's this wild, mind-boggling concept, but I absolutely believe that, you know, at least on a simulation, you know, this could be a simulation we're in, but at least on some level, it is absolutely true.
Yeah. Well, and that's where it transcends the realm of belief, because it's that experiential knowing. I mean, when you live it, it's a profound truth that just, it's almost like it's just, yep, that's something etched into the records right there, where there's no question about it. And that's the fascinating thing is, you know, being able to cognitively still function and bring in these higher, you know, whatever we want to call them, essential truths, you know, the core knowings. There's so many different names people call these things by, but these different experiences and understandings, and applying it into the living waking state in this kind of dense, you know, we all call it 3D, you know, world. But, you know, how has that transition been for you in really applying these higher lessons?
Well, first of all, I just want to validate what you just said and underscore how important it is what you just said about taking those truths, taking that high frequency knowledge, knowingness, vibration, and bringing it into this realm. Because I think for a long time in the spiritual community, it was all about kind of reaching up and interacting in that realm. And it was a lot less about bringing it down into the often uncomfortable 3D realm to transform not only our personal lives, but the collective. So, Peter, really important what you just said first. And now remind me what the question was. I'm sorry.
How do you do it? How do you bring this into the flow of just this infinite now?
Yeah. Well, I think that part of it is to have some curiosity about it and to also let go of some of our attachment that we have to our belief systems. Because, you know, when you experience a past life, a parallel life, aspects of reality, and I've seen I've seen geometric figures, you know, floating past, weird, wild things and incredible synchronicities where it makes you question reality. But if we can sort of have a kind of like a more detached and kind of a bird's eye view relationship with our perspective, our belief systems, our perspective on reality, then it allows for us to observe these things without so much judgment. It allows for us to be amused at our own myopic, narrow-minded perspective on reality that has, you know, up until that period. And so just having some curiosity, just having some detachment, and just knowing that it's part of the adventure makes it much more palatable and makes it can be really fun sometimes.
I think that's the coolest part is, and I think I know it firsthand in that sense where everyone kind of goes through this almost honeymoon phase with spirituality where it's just like, this is so amazing. I have to tell the world. And then more often than not, you get kind of crushed by the fact that most people aren't ready for that, nor do they want it. But I think that's the one thing that always just kind of speaks to the inner child, you know, that is our true beingness. Is just, it's so fun, you know, being here. And when we can start to recognize the energy and manifestation, it's like, I always like to akin it kind of like a video game where it's, we're all on the same map, but in this, every understanding kind of reveals a new aspect. You get new quests, you see different signs, things become bright neon lights that used to be those troublesome adventures you'd have to get to and learn through chaos and suffering. But, you know, you now became, you become empowered where you can now navigate the flow. It's very much, again, like, you know, being on the ocean, being able to set your sails and the wind just always at the back, just yeah. always pushing you along. So it's really powerful because curiosity is the one thing you can't teach. And in truth, our society almost beats it out of us. And that's Absolutely. The biggest detrimental aspect of it.
It is. And you're talking about setting your sails, which is a wonderful thing to do. But we also have to get comfortable when the universe takes our sails away and our oars away, and we're just being on our raft, hanging on for dear life.
Flips the boat, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's the funny thing of, you know, I always try to bring myself back to the knowing of anytime there's any type of chaos or, you know, quote unquote, sad or suffering experience, it's just all is grace. And I think that's really what, you know, these higher lessons can provide us is the clarity in the now to not get caught up in the temporary. Because I find anytime we're attached and identified with these temporary emotions, the events, the scenes, that's when we really take ourselves away from our truth. And then we start living out this wild 3D ride.
Yeah. Yeah. And being aligned with truth is the name of the game. And I know that it's sometimes ephemeral. It's hard to grasp because I think we have to somehow incorporate it into and process it, integrate it within the context of being human, soul in human form. But if we focus on truth, and truth is of the moment, then that really allows us to be in that flow and to be expansive.
Oh yeah. And I love how you said it. I can't remember what show it was on, but I heard it was this interview that you were giving, and it was, they asked you about meditation. You're like, oh, yeah, I meditate every now and then. Like, it's not like a super serious thing, but like, and I just love that because I think that's another spiritual paradox where everyone's like, oh no, you're a spiritual healer. Like, you have to be zenned out all the time. It's just like, no, like the whole point of meditation is, yes, it gives you the tools to tap in, but really it's intended to be living and experiencing that flow.
And, absolutely. Oh, yeah. And it can be a great, sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, no, you're good. No,
It can be a great thing to sort of reorient our perspective, you know, align with body, align with mind, you know, let the mind do its thing, but kind of detach from the mind for a little while to quiet it. And it's, you know, it can be a really good thing, but I think that we have too much compartmentalization when it comes to our spiritual journeys. And I've had some of the most significant expansive experiences while going about normal life. And so it's the sort of thing where meditation can be a helpful tool, but it's not the name of the game. And if we have attachment to that, it's more spiritual ego.
Boom. Nail on the head. I love that. And it's the funniest things is life isn't providing you the lessons to sit on the ground with your eyes closed, listening, you know, and detaching yourself and having that bird's eye view of your own being. It's meant to be utilized for the world. And I think that's always the thing that we tend to get caught in, that, you know, the typical human natures of, you know, oh, I want to idolize someone else, I want to emulate them. But it's like, no, like, meditation is that doorway that when we walk through, we finally come home to like who we really are. And then it becomes that process of just expressing yourself to the universe. And, you know, it's beautiful to be like, see you and talk with you and just see how you've been giving your gifts into the world, into your healing, your perspective, because, you know, it's just another piece of the puzzle that, you know, helps us figure out this great mystery.
And we each have a unique path. And so, and interestingly enough, there's been some scientific research that may indicate that meditation and sort of the more compartmentalized kinds of spiritual connection may be more important for men than women on average. And here's why. There's been some fascinating research at the University of Pennsylvania where they looked at aspects of the male and female brain. And up until the time of sexual development, you know, that adolescent, you know, shift, they have found that up to that point, there's no difference on average between male and female brains. But, you know, afterwards, you know, when a girl goes into womanhood and a boy turns into a man, essentially there are significant differences on average. And, you know, this is generalizing, but this is basically statistics here, where the men have more front to back kind of connection. So they're much better at the, like some of the action stuff, you know, think about driving a fast car around a racetrack, you know, they tend to have more of that stuff. And women tend to have more of the side-to-side brain connectivity. Think in terms of intuitive flow, rational stuff, like back forth. And so it's not that the meditation or the compartmentalized, like spiritual gathering kind of connection doesn't benefit everybody, because it does. But for men, it may be helpful to kind of develop those connections within that, those contexts, so that they have more of that back and forth kind of flow. And again, it's generalization, but there's probably evolutionary reasons why our brains have developed this way.
Oh, 100%. I think that's the beautiful aspect of being able to tie together the spiritual realm and the scientific, because at one point they were united. And that's the cool thing about, you know, that aspect of the brain chemistry and just how things operate, where I see it energetically. And one of the things that I picked up on is when men truly begin their kind of like, whether you want to call it awakening, unfoldment, ascension, whatever process you see fit, it's the feminine energy start to come and play more, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of that cross hemisphere communication within yourself. And that is the funny thing, is even in practices of meditation, I've even found with male and female students, it's men do require a little bit more of the Zen time to really mellow things out, to really build those bridges, to really break away from a lot of those paradigms. But I find that women's meditation is also just that different energy, where it's the expressing it. And I think it comes back to the way in terms of how men and women operate, in the sense of, you know, men always kind of like to go out and do things, so we have to come in. And then the opposite would be the, you know, the woman's roles. Usually they come in where it's now their meditation is to really just let life flow through and overflow it. Yeah. So it's fascinating. Oh, I love it.
Yeah. And I think that with women, first of all, women need to learn to trust that flow, because we've been taught, okay, there's some people who honor, you know, women's intuition, but we really need to trust that flow and then act upon it, because that's the masculine energy, that outward flow that, you know, not only intention, but the action that moves things out. And so, it's this trust into action that women on average, you know, need to develop or focus on. It's just, you know, our brains have evolved to be different, you know, hunters versus gatherers. It's a very different kind of thing. As we evolve into more balanced, you know, masculine and feminine within the context of each body, you know, and integrate, you know, both aspects of ourselves, you know, our soul in masculine and feminine terms, then it's just, we have different lessons to learn.
Right. And that's the thing that, you know, is almost one of those societal shortcomings. And obviously, you know, we can talk, there's nefarious aspects with every kind of agenda and big push with things. But I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions when we materialize and see everything as this external thing, you know, whether it be, you know, not comfortable with your body, when certain energies start to awaken, it means you're identified with this energy now. No, it's always about bringing that balance and bringing that harmony, because then only then do we really allow the floodgates of life to flow through us. So I love how you said that in terms of the expression, where it is that flow into the action with women. See, and that's the thing where I appreciate, because I'm a guy, I don't know how to express that. You do. Like, so, and I think that's the one big thing here is, you know, it's breaking down these walls of separation so we can all really take steps and leaps and bounds together as a civilization to really tap into these deeper spiritual truths, where, I mean, I already know right now, we could change an entire generation with just a few different classes in elementary school with how these kids would develop.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree.
So that's a project. Yeah. So I got to start planning that. Well, you know, because now I was listening to one of your TED Talks, and it was this concept of outsider. And I found it really funny, and I just got giddy when I started to hear it, because I've always called it outlier, where it's just like, but it's the same concept of, you know, there's always an event in life. There's always something that'll make you kind of stand out and see things differently than everyone else. Mm. And that's kind of the tribulations and trials that you're challenged and tested with. And, you know, as more and more people in this kind of truth or community awaken, and they've been more and more ostracized, what is kind of your biggest words of encouragement for those that are experiencing and feeling like that outsider and outlier?
Well, you know, that first of all, being an outsider has multiple gifts. Feeling like an outsider has multiple gifts. It allows you to kind of be on the outside and observing. It allows you to reassess who your tribe really is. But currently, I think that we've got a split within the consciousness community. Mm. And yeah, we have to basically always be assessing our relationship with the tribe. Because, you know, okay, as kids, we grow up and our first tribe is our family, generally speaking. And then as teens, we start to, you know, connect with our peers and they become our tribe. And, you know, our tribe can change over time. And I think what's happened in the last 20 years or so is that many people have found the New Age community, the consciousness movement, to be their tribe. But we currently have a split within that tribe. And the split relates to our current health situation, our current jab situation, our current political situation, where some of us have begun to see truths that we weren't exposed to before. We believe certain words, we believe certain authorities, we believed in certain systems that have actually been manipulating and controlling us. And we are to evolve. We are, you know, focusing more on our sovereignty and breaking through that control on both an individual and a collective level. But there are plenty of people, and I'm going to be careful talking about this because I know that things get censored. But, you know, people think, oh, well, if you're going to be a good spiritual person, you cover your face, right? And it's like, wait a minute, the science doesn't say that, even though we're being told that the science does, because I, you know, former statistician, I've looked at the research and the science definitely doesn't say that. And that's, you know, that's a subject of control. And in fact, it's really interesting because in satanic initiations, from what I've read, there are two things that are required. They have something over their face, and they stand 6 feet apart from each other. Does that sound familiar?
Right. Well, see, and here's the thing where my background in terms of like my education was biology, worked in a biophysics research lab, then worked in big pharma. And I have about 40 to 60 hours of OSHA training. And the moment they started coming out with these, you know, mandates, whatever you want to call them, instantly I was just like, no, it's false, 100%. So I remember doing a video on that. Even a small channel on YouTube was getting censored. Like I have a few videos of actively watching, you know, the viewer counts and the total numbers and the analytics drop as I'm recording it. And for me to see there's that much of an attack on truth like this, I analyzed the deeper agenda to it. And it was the same thing kept coming up again and again. And it was that energetic aspects to rituals. And I think this is something that people are really uncomfortable with. And, you know, and I find it really entertaining, just to kind of like my dark humor in the sense of, you know, spiritual community people, consciousness community being like, oh, no, that stuff's not real. Just the love and light. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like when I awakened to like these deeper truths and have these experiential knowings, I was like, well, dang, like if this stuff's true, because I'm kind of a skeptic in that sense. I always like to, I'm curious by nature. So I was always trying to figure things out. And I'm like, well, if the love and light and the oneness and all this other stuff is true, well, what does this mean about all the nefarious things? And when I started doing the research in that, it's just, it's really not that well hidden in truth nowadays, at least, but it's these darker agendas that are dividing people even more. And I think that's the name of the game, divide and conquer.
It is. And things that I have to tell you that I have to admit that in the past, I bought into certain political narratives because it sounded right. it sounded right. And I started recognizing, first of all, there may be another agenda. Who's funding it? What is the result of it? How is this creating unity? How is this creating caring for people? Like it made me recognize that there's this, again, dual vibration between what's being espoused politically in certain situations or medically in you know, various situations where it's just not aligned with the goodness that they are, you know, acting as though it's the goodness in their heart and they're caring for humanity. And it's mind-blowing. And I think what's happening to a lot of people right now who are waking up in this way, and I don't know if it's true about you, Peter, I love the fact that you've got this scientific background too, but it's this sense of people we connected with before that who we felt were members of our tribe are judging us, are buying into things that we, like once you wake up to truth, and you know, I mean, I know there are multiple levels of truth, but once you wake up to it, when you see people you loved and respected, you know, buying into these things, it's heartbreaking, but it's also making us feel like outsiders again.
Right.
Like, you know, we...
I love it. You know, it's such a tumultuous time, but it's one of those things where it's been very humbling in the sense of, you know, just being graced where... you know, where one door, you know, really shuts, another one opens. And I've found that that's been another thing that's kind of amplified is just as we're going through this wild time of transformation that, you know, the paths are really splitting. You know, there's no more sitting on the fence with these issues. And I find that that's always the blessing in disguise because it's kind of been revealing a lot of that spiritual materialism, of that kind of entitlement, self-righteousness aspects where it's kind of blown my mind. You know, I love how life's always keeping you on your toes, but it's crazy.
The judgment that is experienced for many people, like within the context of, you know, when they're able to speak their truth online or, you know, they venture into a grocery store, you know, saying I'm a sovereign being, I don't want to, you know, put that on.
Yeah.
I want to breathe instead of the breathing in the CO2 that according to OSHA levels, it like gets, you know, sky high within 30 seconds or a minute or whatever it is like underneath that.
So
you know, it's to see the judgment from people who are, you know, being good citizens, they think it's heartbreaking to understand. Yeah. Not only is that judgment there, but the judgment is misdirected. If you are going to be judgmental, it needs to be directed up, you know, not God. Like I'm just talking about powers that be in the 3D realm, that there's some things that are really broken that need to be illuminated and changed. And it is disheartening to see people buy into it.
Yeah. I mean, as a fellow Washingtonian, I think we're kind of in that brightest lights go to the darkest places sense of the game where it's, you know, there's been a lot of people in my life where I've seen this very interesting switch. And it's very fascinating to me just to see how energy impacts everyone because, you know, we bring it back to that concept of fear and you can really get caught up in these narratives rather than overcoming the uncomfortable aspect of questioning and really being liberated from all of that tension and negativity. Because once you actually look at things scientifically, you know, that is the purpose of the you know, the introspective and the objective, you know, is to really kind of build that harmony. And the objective truths are very simple about this. Everyone's just getting so caught up in this emotional manipulation. And it does break your heart. But I think the one thing that's always reassured me is just bless your life. Have a nice path. Because, I mean, there's no way the truth doesn't get out. The truth is the one thing that's always the testament of time. It's going to reveal itself. You know, bringing back to the ritualistic component, I'm very curious because, you know, in terms of your auric field, like I do a lot of Qigong work, and it's just, you know, in terms of feeling your own energy, you have that 6-foot limit. There's the ritual aspect of the 6 feet. And the fact that it's becoming ever more, you know, clear that there is some type of energy issue going on for those who receive it. I always try to look at, you know, the the manifestations of it, you know, like what areas does it really hit? Really hits the heart, really hits the brain, really hits the lungs. Obviously, we're now finding it hits really every organ, but that primary heart mind connection to the spirit, where I'm just very fascinated just to see, you know, kind of the more energetic components to this kind of great awakening and time of ascension that we're in. Like, what are the real impacts of this? We really don't know.
We don't. And, you know, it's funny because I think that the not knowing and being curious is this great combination. And at one point, my guide started presenting me with this sword of light, this sword of white light, and which seemed really strange to me. Because first of all, I'm peaceful enough to escort insects from my house out in a jar so they can go outside. Unless it's an infestation, it's a whole other thing. But and you know, I don't eat anything that you know crawled, walked, flew, swam. It's not in my nature. And here my guides were presenting me with this sword of light. And I'm thinking, this is really strange. And I intuitively knew that I was bringing it through into the center of my body. And it would sort of like appear in my mind's eye many times a day. And I just sort of pull it in and pull it in. And I'm thinking, you know, sword, you know, warrior kind of thing. And in fact, had an interesting situation where, you know, I normally am really, have really clear boundaries energetically with my space, with myself. And I had, I'm not going to go into details here, but I had something really evil flying into my space, flying to interact with me multiple times a day and night, where I had to sort of invoke the sword and then push the light out. And so it's the kind of thing where I find myself being asked to not only have a you know, less attachment to realities, to routines, to things and people in my life, but to also be open to what the universe is bringing me that I have had no expectations about.
Oh, I love it. Well, I'm curious, is there anything else you feel like you'd like to touch upon or you're evoked to really let the listeners know?
I just think that we need to have an open mind and curiosity about truth and really evaluate our relationship with truth. Because, you know, I've kind of done that myself with my perspective on reality, with my perspective on various things. I think that our relationship with truth can be very complex. And if we can kind of take a step back and assess, you know, am I willing to see the truth? Do I have resistance to seeing truth? Are there aspects of my belief system that I think are just, you know, background absolute truth that I should be questioning? That curiosity, that detachment, I think is a really important piece to develop right now, because it's going to come in handy in the near future, I think.
Oof, 100%, 100%. And I just want to sprinkle some extra on top, and it's question the idols that people keep creating.
Yes.
I think that's probably like the biggest thing where it's, you know, oh, this one truther said this, I'm going to just blindly do that. It's like, no,
yeah.
discernment. That's the textbook curiosity and questioning.
Yeah. And again, that to me, that relates to our beliefs and our relationships with the tribe, because we go from one tribe to another, and it's really, in order to create the planet we want to create, we have to be aligned with soul, and our tribes can come and go, but we need to be discerning about what the tribal beliefs are. And yes, there may be people in the truther movement who are espousing all sorts of truth, but they don't have the truth. They don't have all truth. And we need to discern.
Love that. That's so true. And I guess that brings us back to the benefits of the outlier perspective is, you know, you from an early age, I feel those of us that have tread that path where it's, we've had to really determine our own truth forcibly. And it hasn't always been the most loving of journeys, but it's the one that's led us here to this opportunistic time to really lead ourselves and help inspire others to capitalize on this time for change.
Absolutely.
I love it. Well, With that, Christine, I just want to thank you so much for joining us on Creatives Chat. I'm going to have you stick around for the after show, but I guess this is a good time to roll the outro.
That concludes this episode of Creatives Chat. Thank you for watching. Join us every Thursday at 3:33 p.m. Pacific Daily Time as creative minds get together and chat about who knows what. View more episodes on our YouTube channel. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Thanks again to our sponsors for making this show possible. Thank you, We Are Historically, for your conscious human apparel. Shop online at wearehistorically.com.
Hi, I'm Darius Wilrich. I'll teach you everything you need to know about playing jazz piano like a pro with my 12-week online video course and downloadable guidebook, Jazz Piano Pro Essentials. Enroll today at jazzpianopro.com.
Thank you for joining us. Have a happy always.